This is Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Meghna Chakrabarty is off today. Today, the Wall Street Journal reported that the losses at J.P. Morgan Chase could grow to more than $4 billion. That news comes as the bank announced the sudden retirement of one of its top investment officers, Ina Drew, with more executives expected to follow her out the door soon. The losses disclosed by the bank last week are the result of the kind of risky speculation on derivatives that sparked the financial meltdown of 2008. Massachusetts Congressman Barney Frank co-authored the landmark federal law designed to prevent another financial crisis. How to implement many of the law's new rules is still being debated in Washington. But Frank says the news from J.P. Morgan is evidence that the law is needed and that it works.
People should understand, we never set out, nor should we have, to try to stop financial institutions from losing money. That's in the nature of the business. What we set out to do in the law, and we're in the process of getting implemented, is prevent a mistake from reverberating in a negative way throughout the economy. For example, one of the things that we say is that when an institution gets involved in these derivative transactions, we have to make sure that they've got enough capital so that it's not going to wipe them out. And it also underlines the importance of the rule that Paul Volcker pushed that we put into the law, which says that if you are a bank, as J.P. Morgan is, and you are getting your insurance from the federal government, we don't want you risking that money.
As you know, there's a debate in Washington over the so-called Volcker Rule, which would prohibit banks from using its cash on risky speculative investment. Would the rule have helped J.P. Morgan avoid these kinds of huge losses?
Remember, the rule is not yet finally implemented, and the banks, led by J.P. Morgan, were trying to get it put in a form that would not have prevented this. I believe this law strengthens the case for saying that you can't hedge against the economy in general. It is one thing to hedge against a specific investment you've made. It's another to be making this kind of bet, which is what a hedge is, against the economy in general.
And Dodd-Frank was passed in 2010. Why is it taking so long to get these rules put into place?
First, because the Republicans, once they came to power in 2011, reduced the funding for the agencies that have to promulgate the rules. In particular, this rule, derivatives, comes under the jurisdiction primarily of the Commodities Futures Trading Commission. The Republicans in the House have refused to appropriate enough money. Now, the Democrats in the Senate have pushed for more, but the compromise has still left them underfunded. That's why I hope one of the things that will come out of this is that we'll be able to overcome this resistance on the part of the Republicans in the House. I also think it will make it easier for the regulators to go forward with the appropriate form of the rule, and about 3 or 4 months we'll have it.
Congressman, the bank has announced an internal investigation into this loss. The Security and Exchange Commission has reportedly begun a preliminary investigation as well. Do you think that's a good idea? I mean, should J.P. Morgan face fines or penalties as a result of what happened?
Well, first of all, if you say, should J.P. Morgan investigate, I got to tell you, if I lost $2 billion, I'd sure want to find out why I did it and see how I could stop it. Of course they should. As to the SEC, yes, I can't prejudge now. You say, should they face fines? I don't know. I don't want to prejudge this. Again, J.P. Morgan's generally a pretty well-run institution. That's precisely the point, that in the best-run institution, this kind of activity is inherently risky. What we're saying is, given that you're going to do some things that are risky, we want to put some safeguards in there. We want to make sure that if you make a mistake, you pay for the mistake, and it does not lead to the kind of contagion. But yes, certainly people ought to look at what went wrong.
One last question, Congressman, as one of the co-authors of Dodd-Frank. When you heard about this, did it keep you up a little bit at night, and did you start thinking, geez, maybe we should have made Dodd-Frank even stronger?
No, because, again, I want to stress this point. We never thought we would try. We were never trying to stop them from losing money. I do believe that the rules already in place mean that this kind of mistake isn't going to lead to the contagion and the implosion that we had before. That is, we've already told them to put up more capital. We have rules in place that say these trades have to be more closely watched. No, I took it as a confirmation that we'd made the right decisions.
All right. Barney Frank, thanks so much for talking to us. We appreciate
it. You're welcome.
That's Congressman Barney Frank, Democrat from Massachusetts. Staying in Washington now in politics, there's been a lot of talk these days about the divisive nature of the political process and the toll it's taking on bipartisanship. That's what convinced Maine Senator Olympia Snow, a moderate Republican, not to seek re-election. And here's Massachusetts Senator John Kerry talking recently about longtime Senate Republican Dick Lugar of Indiana, another moderate, defeated last week by Tea Party-backed candidate Richard Murdoch.
He was willing to reach across the aisle, which is the only way you get things done. So it's a great blow to that concept of bipartisanship, but we have to go on and we have to continue to do our work, and we will do so, but it'll be a huge loss to all of us.
So how do we measure bipartisanship? Kerry mentioned reaching across the aisle. Congressional Quarterly took a crack at analyzing that question by looking at how frequently lawmakers voted with their party or against it. Barney Frank, for example, he voted with the Democrats 96% of the time. Not surprising for the liberal stalwart. Glenn Johnson is politics editor at Boston.com. He wrote about this recently and joined us. Hi, Glenn.
How are you doing, Anthony?
Good. Good to have you. So we heard Senator Kerry there lamenting the defeat of Richard Lugar, who he said reached across the aisle a lot. How often did that happen, according to Congressional Quarterly?
Well, they looked at votes throughout 2011, and they had Dick Lugar as siding with his party 86% of the time. Olympia Snow, who Senator Kerry mentioned recently, was 57% of the time, and John Kerry himself was actually 96% of the time with the Democrats.
96%. So let's just go through those again. So Olympia Snow really sort of jumps out as the person who is sort of the most willing to reach across the aisle. She did it 56% of the time, you said.
57%, yes.
Yeah, yeah. And John Kerry, 96% of the time, so not that much.
Right.
What did the Congressional Quarterly find out about Scott Brown, who, of course, faces a re-election challenge?
Well, in this context, that was interesting because here John Kerry was talking in relation to Dick Lugar and in relation to Olympia Snow that, you know, their loss was both not just experientially but also, you know, a blow to the bipartisan spirit. But Scott Brown was with the Republican Party only 54% of the time, and that was the second most bipartisan rating that they could give in that whole chamber. So he was second only to Susan Collins, another moderate from Maine, who sided with the Republican Party 52% of the time. So Scott Brown actually stacked up quite favorably to some of these other people that John Kerry was singling out.
So it's interesting looking at Kerry and Brown. Both extol the virtues of working across the aisle, but two
right.
very different records. Kerry, 96% of the time with the Democrats, and as you mentioned, Brown, the second most bipartisan senator in Washington. What explains this? Is it the fractured nature of the Republican Party or the fact that Democrats hold the Senate majority? What's your view on that?
Well, I think some of it in relation to John Kerry's score is Democrats trying to hold together in the face of the Republican minority challenge. I mean, Republicans in theory are in the minority in the Senate chamber, but their unity has allowed them to block a lot of Democratic initiatives. So likewise, the Democrats have had to stay together to try and fight back. Secondly, from Scott Brown's perspective, there's a lot of Democrats that look at him and see him as having walked a very fine line, that he picks certain unimportant votes, casts them with the Democrats so that these kind of ratings come out more in his favor. And they look at bigger votes like Elena Kagan for the Supreme Court, or they look at I'm trying to think of another one, Don't Ask, Don't Tell, where he comes off the fence right at the end. And they're saying, you know, these ratings are misleading when you look at how he actually legislates. Oh, the other one was the vote last week against the Democratic proposal to prevent student loan doubling, you know, something
sure.
that would obviously be important with all the academic institutions here in Boston.
And Glenn, voting records, of course, just mm-hmm. one measure of bipartisanship. For instance, it doesn't necessarily reflect how much these lawmakers are working behind the scenes with other party members to hammer out legislative deals. How well do we know anything about how well, for instance, Kerry and Brown operate in that department?
Well, I think that, you know, John Kerry was put on the super committee to try and work through the country's economic issues, spending issues. And so I think that whether or not they achieve success or not, I think that's testimony to his both seniority and his experience, but also his ability to work with members of the other party. He's the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, so that would suggest some level of diplomacy. Scott Brown, you know, has racked up a couple victories here of late. You know, he was at the White House a couple times in a row, to watch the president sign legislation that he actually pushed. So I mean, he helped get the Stock Act through, which prevents insider trading by members of Congress. He helped push through crowdsourcing, crowdfunding legislation, which allows investment to go forward. And so, you know, whether or not it's all personally attributable to him or not, I mean, as anything is with Congress, you know, people can claim some level of victory when it's their bill getting passed.
Sure. And when it comes to Scott Brown, he's going to be facing what we expect to be a fairly close race mm-hmm. against a challenge against from Elizabeth Warren. He does tout this idea of him being a Republican who is willing to vote against his party. He sort of has to do that in Massachusetts. But how important an issue is that with voters, in your view?
Well, I think there's a certain segment of the population that's very much behind her. There's a certain segment that very much likes him and what he represents, you know, lack of complete rigidity in ideology. There's a whole group in the middle that are still waiting to see how this race shakes out. There's a segment of that group that's not sure really whether he's just doing things for this 2-year span here so he can get the safety of a 6-year term and then do whatever he wants. You know, there's other people that look at him and say, wow, you know, is she going to be so far to the left and so partisan that we're going to give up the Republican counterbalance that he represents? So there's a lot of shopping still going on in this race.
Glenn Johnson is the politics editor for Boston.com. He was talking to us from Washington about partisanship in Washington and how we measure it. Glenn Johnson, thanks so much. Always a pleasure to have you. Stay with us. Up next, longer school days, how they can transform schools and high poverty communities, and how making them cost effective is a major challenge. I'm Anthony Brooks. Stay with us. This is Radio Boston.